to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains, and welcome back to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Wow, look at the phone lines. They are lighting up. I'm so glad. Have you ever thought in your mind what it might feel like to have your freedom taken away from you, to be robbed of your identity, not knowing who you are, who you belong to, your real name, and then finally finding that freedom after being kidnapped by your father? Well, Ariel Bickle, she is rising like a phoenix from the ashes after having that very same experience as a child. It was awful, I can only imagine. Brains, after being kidnapped by her father and suffering severe trauma and abuse, Ariel, she's here with us on the edge to talk about her experience and what she's doing as an activist and a motivational coach. And what is this term that she's coined, a shifter? All of that is about to be revealed to us in this incredible interview here on the Edge. Welcome, Ariel Bickle. How are you?
Good morning, April. I am fantastic. Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you for that.
Well, the Brains are happy to have
you.
This is an incredible story, one of that's tried and true. So we don't want to delay. I want my Brains to know, what in the world happened, girl?
Mm-hmm. So, in a nutshell, I was very young when I was abducted by my father and my stepmother from my birth mother, and actually the home of my grandparents where we were staying at the time. And I was given a different name and birthday and really identity. My parents also assumed aliases at that point. And literally, we vanished and disappeared. And I lived with that identity until the day that I graduated high school. I actually was abducted more than once. This whole saga began when I was about a year and a half old. I was returned to my mother. She came and got me. And then the second time, they made sure that there would be no way to trace us. And that's when my identity literally was changed.
Wow.
Yeah.
And during that abduction, you said that you were subjected to cruelty. Was that by both parents, by your stepmother and your father?
Yes. So parental abduction is actually an issue that a lot of folks don't know about, and unfortunately, it's much more common than we realize, but it's still an untapped issue. So to say that someone who is ready to abduct their child and change their identity in their lives is to say this person is not really thinking clearly. They're certainly not probably putting the child's best interest in mind. Now, I say probably because there are outlying cases. I'm not here to make commentary on every parental abduction case. Some people think that they are rescuing their child from an abusive situation.
Right.
But I would say that the majority of the time, what it actually is a power struggle where one parent is placing the child in the center to use as a pawn or a tool of punishment for the other parent and probably their extended family. So this really was, you know, this was the case with me, was that my father was not a mentally well person at the time. Anyhow, he had a lot of rage against my mother and her family. And, you know, so taking me was just really the first step, because then the rest of our lives we still dealt with, and I say we because I had other siblings involved, we dealt with trauma and abuse and control issues and all the things that would go along with somebody who would actually take that drastic of a step. So,
and you know,
what I find
fascinating, for the lack of a better word, is that when someone goes to this extreme, we know that they are mentally ill, but there's a lot of premeditation and planning that goes into this. And so somewhere in their psychotic mind, there are very conscious thoughts of what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. And that's awful. Do you have a relationship with your mother, birth mother?
So I don't, actually. The regarding parental abduction, for every year that a child is removed from their primary parents, a disconnection and almost a tearing of your fabric of your identity happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so with every year that passes, that disconnect grows stronger. So I had been with my mother on and off until I was almost five when they took me that second time. I did not meet her or speak with her until I was 26.
Wow.
There was about a year, a little more than a year, where we tried to make a relationship work. I actually was living in Colorado at the time, sold most of my belongings, put the rest in storage, moved to Florida where she was still living, moved in with her, and for about 6 months, tried to build a relationship and make that work. But she was still so traumatized and living in the past, she didn't really want to deal with the truth of what the issue had been. She just wanted me to basically cut my identity off once again and start fresh and start a new life with them and forget that my previous life had had ever happened. So there's so many different layers of trauma and, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome that go on. Really what I felt that I was left at a point where it was time to go on and do my own healing and take responsibility for my own life and identity and have that be my way forward so that I could be a voice for others or an encouragement to others who'd experienced not just parental abduction, but any kind of trauma and abuse, to move forward with, to be a lighthouse, I guess, for others, and realize that my birth mother, my stepmother, my father, none of those people were open to wanting to heal the past or really deal with it in a self-empowered and proactive way and move forward. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you have siblings. Were they abducted as well, or did they stay with your birth mother? What happened to your siblings?
Right. So I have three siblings. We're essentially estranged. I do have slight contact with my sister. They're half-siblings, and they were born to my father and my stepmother. We grew up as siblings. Now, to complete this identity change in totality so that a child doesn't even remember who they used to be, you've got to do brainwashing on a 24/7 basis every day for the life of having that child with you. I grew up with my siblings thinking we were all full siblings. I didn't remember the story. I didn't know the story. I didn't have a connection. Now I can look at photos of our childhood, the few photos that I have, and here I am, this black-haired, dark-eyed, you know, young girl, and then three siblings who are extremely blonde and shocking blue eyes, but we never stopped to reflect that way. So it's only in adulthood that I've come to know even part of the story. And unfortunately, because a system is dysfunctional in its totality, so this kind of, any kind of trauma or abuse does not impact one person that is the focal point or receiving it. It actually destroys the fabric of the system from within. And
I know that you do a lot of work over in Mexico. Are you part Hispanic? Is it your birth mother? Was
I'm
she
not
Hispanic?
Actually.
Or Latin?
No, I'm not actually. What I found at 25 when I started to learn the truth of the story is that I'm actually Jewish.
Wow.
That may or may not have had something to do with the schism between my parents and families. Evidently, there was some attitude about Jewish heritage, but I grew up knowing nothing of that. Actually, the family that's in Mexico now is an extended adopted family that I connected with in my 30s, and I consider them my true family. I have a mother, I have a godson. I have all kinds of nieces and nephews there. When I made the decision to cut myself off completely from my birth family, because it was more trauma than there was anything positive,
right.
I set out making my family. And I really believe that family is who we choose to be in our lives. And so then I was open to finding a family that loved and accepted me for who I was. So I like to say that at 31, I met my real mom, and that is this woman, Flor, in Mexico, and her whole family.
So
I go back every year.
Mm-hmm. You're also a very strong proponent and activist. Tell us a little bit about your activism activities.
Right.
Who you're supporting.
Right. So because I grew up understanding what it felt like to live with abuse under the thumb of someone controlling, and had been exposed to concepts of social justice. Ironically, that's the thing. It's never a clear, direct line. I'd been raised learning about social justice, different cultures, being open, certainly strong values around protecting the environment. And yet those values were not they were sullied maybe by the truth of the situation we were living in. Anyway,
right.
As I grew into a young adult, into high school, and left and moved on in my life, I determined that not only was I going to save myself, but that I was going to work in ways in my life to the best of my ability so that no one else ever had to suffer what I suffered. And I didn't just focus on child abuse. I actually looked for wherever injustice and power struggles were going on. And interestingly enough, the first arena that I entered was undocumented immigrant rights. I grew up in a community where I had entree into immigrant community of Mexican workers who were working in the fields. It's Colorado. It's very agricultural. And my eyes were opened to a whole community that was living in the shadows, that was having to hide who they really were, that were being treated like property instead of human beings. And I think there was a real parallel there for me. And that's really been something I've carried forward in my life and expanded the issues I've worked on to anywhere that I see control, misuse of power, and dysfunction going on.
Well, I really commend you there for, taking that severe pain and turning it into something very passionate. But you've also created a whole thought process and mindset and word that really identifies with what you've done, and that's a shifter. Can you tell my brains really what is a shifter and how you came up with that name, and what does that mean? What does that look like?
Right, thank you. I'm very excited that this concept I've had growing within me for so many years is finally birthing into the light of day. For me, a shifter is short for somebody who works in a paradigm shift model. And this is a term that's growing with the rapidity and increasing popularity, right, to say paradigm shift. Fundamentally, for me, through my years of activism, political work, working on trauma and abuse issues, what I continue to see is that systemically and organizationally, we continue to look for the problems outside of ourselves, and we continue to look for the solutions outside of ourselves, and we demonize other people and ways of being in order to make ourselves right to do our work. And while our intent may be to stamp out injustice, to protect the environment, to do whatever kind of justice work we want to do and healing, mm-hmm. if we're not looking internally and doing our own transformational work first, then we're not fundamentally going to heal the problems outside of ourselves in the world. So it was very personal initially, because I thought, I'm not having the full impact. There's a limit to where I'm being able to make this change. And I'm also working in some institutions and systems where I'm not feeling that I'm having the full capability to share my innovative ideas and also speak my truth powerfully and make the shift. And I thought, well, to create the shift, I need to be the shift. And it really came out of that. So to me, now I'm very intent on creating a whole new wave of leadership, of movers and shakers, of game changers and visionaries in the world who lead from a place of authenticity and personal accountability and transformation first. To me, a shifter is a leader, but not all leaders are shifters, because a shifter is someone who says, just because we've done things this way forever, just because the institutions or organizations are set up this way, doesn't mean I need to be limited by that. There are a million different
right.
ways in the world to make change. And
right.
so a shifter is a provocateur and someone who I like to say is a member of the square peg in a round hole society. We may come crosswise with political structures, organizations, institutions at this juncture in the development of our planet where we're not in agreement with the way things are being done. They don't resonate with our internal alignment and our value system. We know
right.
that the system we're working in to make change is actually continuing the poverty or the pain that's being done. In other words, we must continue to do our own work and then invent, create, and employ new strategies for making the change we want to see in the world. So shifters for me are the people who, frankly, are a little renegade and are ready to say, my bottom line is having the shift and the healing and the compassion move forward in the world, not the addiction to or the fealty to the system in which I'm working. And I know that's really
powerful.
Scary to people who run the systems, but it is very powerful.
Right.
Part of it was that I really had to stop and take a look and say, in my life, in my own personal work, where has the most powerful elevation and healing and transformation taken place? Always when I'm dealing with a person one-on-one or a group of people who are dropping in and getting real with their true selves and their own true stories, that's where shift happens to a level that's unstoppable. So I've decided that I'm now taking my work to a next level. It's not that I'm changing what I'm doing. I'm becoming more focused, more intentional, and more committed to the personal transformation aspect so that we can unleash a whole new wave of shifters into the world that make change to an extent and to a degree and a level that has never been seen before.
Right, and it has to be more than a fundamental change. It has, you know, we have to get out of our own way. We have to have some structure. So many people suppress what has happened to them. They
yeah.
are ashamed by it. They are self-medicating. They are
yeah.
Deliberately being predators to other people because, you know, hurt people hurt people. And it's really unfortunate, but you have really been able to, again, take all of this and encapsulate it into something that's very beautiful. I love the word provocateur. I'll have to be sure to
Me
use
too.
That again. That's beautiful. But now you are also a motivational coach. Tell my brains a little bit about the work that you're doing. You know, elaborate a little bit more. I know you were just talking about the definition of what a shifter is, but some
right.
of the groups that you are working with as a coach
mm-hmm.
and as a motivational
mm-hmm.
speaker.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes. So that's the thing, right? Being a shifter is sort of hard to define ourselves with this other terminology, but for lack of better terminology, a motivational and transformational coach, a speaker, certainly moving more into writing. I'm in my own process of transformation, and I fundamentally, where I'll start is to say that I'm not perfect. I don't have it all figured out. And that's actually my superpower, that I'm willing to come out and share that with people and say, you are perfect in that you're imperfect. It's being
right.
open and honest about your own process that is what is most powerful to share with people. Shame is the thing that helps us stay in our own way, as you said, and shame cannot survive in the light of day. So
right.
taking this to my next powerful level, means how do I support other people in tapping into their own courage and their own power and their own story and holding space for them and also sometimes holding their feet to the fire to own their power and story so that they move forward making the biggest impact they can. The most powerful work I'm doing currently is working with people one-on-one. They come to me as one-on-one clients, and we do one-on-one coaching. I believe that it takes really a few months to get started going in deep and knowing your own story. I take people deeper than they've probably ever gone in their lifetime before, and I encourage them to keep going deeper because where we think we block ourselves, the truth is actually probably about 10 to 20 layers deeper than that. And it is an act of bravery, and not everybody's up to the challenge. You know, we get there in increments, and eventually one day we're like, I'm ready to go all the way in. I get
well,
to
it's
hold
scary.
Space and support people. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. And every
time you have
time
to relive all of the past drama, and then you're at this place of, you know, you're in a quandary in your life. You don't know where you're going to go, if it's going to send you back in a tailspin,
right,
or if it's going to thrust
right
you forward.
Right.
Now,
and
how
the
did
other
you,
thing
I'm sorry, how did
I
you find your awakening?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, yeah, you know, do some deep therapy? Did you, you know, read a lot of books? How did you really, you know, emerge from this?
Yeah, I would say there are several key things that frankly have saved my life and supported me to get to this point I am today. One is my connection with nature. I grew up in the woods, and going back into nature to feel safe, to feel calm, and also to connect with source energy and beauty, to be reminded that there is beauty in the world and that the natural system is perfect. And so I can trust in that. The second thing is I did get myself into intense therapy at a very young age. At 21, I went into therapy so that I could be sure I would not continue on the cycle of abuse. That was a huge
right
goal of mine, and also I would find my voice to share my story. And I did therapy for decades, and if I needed to tomorrow, I would still call that therapist. But that literally gave me the safety to start owning my story and discovering my truth. And deciding that it was important to live because the world needed me. And then since then, it's really been an ongoing daily process of personal transformation. Reading, absolutely. There are books that have saved my life. Now I'm at that point where, and of course, going out and being of service is the thing
right
that's always pulled me back from the edge. YouTube videos. Enrolling myself a couple years ago, I entered into a 5-month program, very deep personal transformational work, with the end goal being to come out an empowered leader to make change in the world. So
wow,
for me, it's really I say that advocacy is not something we do 9 to 5, it's a way of life. And I would say now, that is actually part of this bigger picture, which is personal transformation, healing, and elevation is a 24/7 job, and nobody's responsible for doing it except ourselves. We
absolutely
are our own rescue, and
absolutely,
and that's what I do in my coaching. I don't empower anybody. I don't save or heal anybody. They have that within them. I hold
right
space. I guide them. I share tools with them. I hold their hands sometimes. I kick them in the ass if that's what they need, lovingly, with compassion, because
right
I see the beauty and the greatness in each person. So I get to be a reflection back to them until they see it and believe it. And
well, I think
I'm
that
building
been
that into programming also.
Oh, no, but oh,
I just wanted
I think
to
what
say
you
that,
have done
yeah
and how mm-hmm you've been able to overcome and to be able to really put other people in front of what you're doing and not throwing them under the bus or being run over by the bus. I think that that is so powerful. Can you tell my brains, please, Ariel, how to get in contact with you if my brains want more information? If they're in a rough place, they don't have to be maybe as severe as yours, but if they're looking for someone to talk to and to bring them up out of this dark space, can you tell my brains how to get in contact with you?
Absolutely. I'm very open and would love to hear from anybody. So first of all, they can find me on Facebook. My personal page, which they can check out, is Ariel Tamara Bickle. And then I do have a now professional page where they can see more of my work directed towards personal transformation. And that page is Ariel Bickle. They can also contact me at my email account, A-R-I-E-L, B as in boy, I-C-K-E-L, @gmail.com. And they can call me at 505-321-6867.
Well, brains, I mean, this has just been an incredible, compelling story. I am just flabbergasted that people are still, you know, doing the things that they're doing, taking their kids away from their parents, but they're doing it strategically. They're doing it with little forethought. So we may think that they're crazy, but they could be cunning like a fox. Thank you so much, Ariel, for coming here on The Edge and sharing this powerful story of hope and redemption with my brain. I appreciate you so much. I want you to know that there's always a place for you to have a seat here on The Edge and vibe with my brains, all right?
Thank you, April. I appreciate it. And to everyone out there who's listening, you are not alone, and you are absolutely capable of transforming your life. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Brains, go back and listen to other edgy conversations. We got some more mellow stuff. We got some great jazz, art, entertainment. We got some science. We have someone that is going to come on the show that is looking for the cure for the superbug, right? All right, so stay tuned and stay close to The Edge. Thanks so much, Ariel. I appreciate you, and we will talk again soon, all right?
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right. Bye, brains.
Bye.